Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Shaka Hislop. So much to discuss and here to give us their views on what they've seen unfold this weekend. Welcome in Stuart Robson, Julien Laurent, and the one, the only, Uncle Jan is with us, who is pitch side as a certain Erling Haaland put on quite the show in his Premier League debut. Very much the man of the match, winning the penalty and scoring it in the first half. Sensational finish in the second to give the defending champions a win in the opening game of the season, Jan. How are you? I imagine very objective pitch side.
Well, the Norwegian family keep together, of course. I mean, very proud. I mean, going into this game, and as you see after the Community Shield, couple of Nunez goals, there was only two stories. That was him being very bad, or he scoring a couple of goals, and he did the latter. I was on my way down to halftime for the interviews when we heard this jeer, and we thought it's a goal, but it was a penalty. And I must say, I was a bit nervous when he stepped up, but as always, he scores.
What's interesting, Julien, is that we followed his career quite closely, obviously, here on the show. We know, and this doesn't really surprise us, that you can put in these sort of performances. But we also know that English football is quite insular, and it's only really when you do it in England that it really counts. What a statement this was.
Yeah, it was massive. And I think Pep Guardiola, in the end, summed it up quite well after the game, saying last week in the Community Shield, everybody said it was a failure because he missed a couple of chances. And now people are comparing to Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo and Thierry Henry, and I think he's right. And he will miss more chances through the season. Of course, everybody does. He will score loads of goals as well because he's a very special player. But I think he was good today just to avoid any more of the, oh, is he good enough? Does he need time to adapt? Does he need this? Does he need that? He needed a performance like today to score the goals, especially the way the second one happened. The first one is a pen, Jan just said it, but the second one, the through ball from De Bruyne, the run, the kind of run that last weekend was not picked up by De Bruyne, for example, or Mahrez with City. This time the ball was perfect and he finished it. And I think also the way that second goal was scored will help him a lot as well for the games to come now.
Yeah.
We're obviously seeing the first goal. The second goal here, Robbo. How good is this a finish?
It's a good finish, of course it is, but the run's equally as good. And one thing I'd say about the game, I was wondering how he was going to find space because West Ham dropped really deep. There was no space for him to run in behind for most of the game. They had Declan Rice and Souček playing just in front of him, so I wasn't sure how he was going to get the ball. He had two opportunities to make runs in behind. One for the penalty, which wasn't that much space to run in behind, but he got that absolutely right. And then he was clever not to try and score himself, but take the touch away from the goalkeeper. He realised how close the goalkeeper was to him. And the second one, as soon as De Bruyne picked up the ball, everybody could see where the space was. The defender probably knew he was going to run into there, but he had so much pace. Then he ran round the ball and just passed it into the corner. And you knew he was going to finish it. So he showed, in limited opportunities today, what a great player he is.
I think that's Jan I hear.
No, I'm just saying, I just agree with the boys because I think that second goal is vital. Of course, it's vital for any striker to get that first goal. If you wait for that, there'll be a lot of talking around. But I think that the second goal is so important because the thing is that there will always be talked of how long will De Bruyne and the rest of the Manchester City need to adjust to Erling Haaland? How long will Erling need to adjust to the Pep way of playing? That's why that second goal is so vital for both Manchester City and Erling Haaland.
So about the goalkeeper's perspectives for both goals, Shaq.
Yeah.
First one's a nightmare because you think you're going to get there, but these big giraffe legs come and take the ball
exactly.
away.
Before I get to that, first of all, if you're David Moyes and you see the reaction post-Community Shield, you're thinking, please, no, y'all just stop. Just stop putting Erling Haaland down. The last thing we need is an angry Erling Haaland showing up. And that's exactly what you get. But then you know David Moyes, you know West Ham, who are a very good team, let's remember. Sit deep, soak pressure up, and try to deny Erling Haaland that space. And then the pass from Gundogan. And Areola, who came off the bench a few minutes before, which I don't think had anything to do with it. It's about that leggy stride. And I remember a couple of seasons ago, Stuart and I having a conversation about how quick Erling Haaland is over the ground. He is so tall, his stride is so long, that he is deceptively quick.
Right.
if it's Raheem, if Areola is standing there and that pass is intended for Raheem Sterling, and you know, and you can see how quick he is, I think you hold your ground. But it's so difficult to judge Erling Haaland that you commit. And, I mean, quite clearly a penalty. There's no argument. The funny thing about that for me was, whenever there's a penalty, there's always somebody who says, no, ref, and goes to the ref. You know it's a penalty. There's always somebody who says, no, ref, he didn't touch him. Every single person just turned and started walking away. You know, it was just that obvious. And then the second came later on, when West Ham are goal down and now trying to play a little bit higher up, and there's room in behind.
Yeah.
As good a finish as it was, the pass from De Bruyne equally so. And job done. And Man City made a very good West Ham team look very ordinary on the day.
Jan Pep Guardiola spoke about this afterwards. Once the penalty was awarded, he was very impressed with the way that Haaland grabbed the ball. This is mine. I'm taking this penalty.
Yeah, there was no way back for him not doing that. Also, that in at Manchester City, they haven't had this penalty taker. Mm. Like, there's been different doing that. So there was always him got to do that, because you want that first goal. Never underestimate that first goal in a new club, in a new season. So, and he got the penalty himself. There used to be an old rule, if you foul, you shouldn't do the penalty and so on. Well, these rules doesn't count for these big strikers, these big goal getters.
I'm intrigued, Jules. What did the crowd make of it around you today?
Like, as in the West Ham crowd, you mean?
Yeah, just as a sense of occasion.
So the feeling I had, and I thought it was a bit similar in the Community Shield last weekend, was very much the, like, OK, we want to see Haaland play. I think even as a West Ham fan or a Liverpool fan or any opposition fans that they will face now, there's this feeling of, like, OK, we want to see, now that he's here, finally, we want to see how he plays, what he does, if we can defend against him, what kind of run he's going to make, what kind of goal he's going to score. And I felt there was that today as well. There was that kind of anticipation of, like, even if he plays against you, I'm not, City fans, of course, want to see him do well. But even I felt opposition fans were very much like, okay, you also came today to watch West Ham and to watch your players and Jared Bowen and the new signings, blah, 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 of course. But I think there was a feeling as well of, we want to see Erling Haaland now, a bit like you would want and go and see a Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi, or this and that. Not that he's at that level yet, but certainly I had that feeling that there was a sense of anticipation and even of excitement, really, to be fair, even amongst the rest of the stadium.
That excitement, though, was somewhat muted when we saw on the big screen Jan was apparently put up there as he was broadcast with Erling's dad as he was making his way to the seat, Jan.
Yeah, it was, and it was the first time I had two, father and son, at the game, and he was delayed to the game. So I said to him, "So Alfie, where are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm with my family, with the Manchester City fans." "Yeah, but we're going to see each other at halftime." And I said, "Where are you?" And he said, "Well, I am with the City fans," and there were like thousands of them. And somehow we managed to find him, and he came down, and of course he was proud. Is to find his balance between being an advisor, being a dad, and of course anyone can understand how nervous you are when your son is doing that. That penalty, but this is a good thing for them. And after the game, we spoke to Erling as well, and Erling said, "This is a great day for me and my family. This is a family-bound man, and this team Haaland is not only a cliche; it's really a thing." They were all, the whole family, today, sitting, as I said, behind there. And Alfie told me when he was going off for the penalty, there was 200 Manchester City fans turned around to him and filming him with their phones as he was shooting, and it was funny. Around the 80th minute, people were thinking there is only one Alfie Haaland. There's not many fathers who get that in a game.
Hey, that's all right. Jan's like his bodyguard.
Well,
Kevin Costner, Whitney Houston. There it is. It's all playing out on the sideline.
No idea where you're going with this.
It's beautiful.
No
idea. Right, let's go to Robbo to ruin the party. Robbo, you were really disappointed with the way the West Ham approached this game today.
Yeah, West Ham and David Moyes must have watched the game between Fulham and Liverpool, and how Fulham got around Liverpool and made it difficult for them. There were 62,000 people at the game, the highest crowd that West Ham have ever had for a home game. And you expected them to be in the faces of Manchester City, try and press them fairly high. B, play at a high tempo. And what did they do? Sit back, allowed Manchester City to play a passing game. It was almost at walking paces at times, and it was too easy for Man City to get it into wide areas and pass their way through West Ham. I thought it was a shocking performance by West Ham, and their approach, I couldn't think, could be any worse to try and get the 62,000 back inside the stadium. Good from Man City, of course. Great for Haaland, but really poor from West Ham.
Shall I ask Jan? I'll ask Jan.
Ask him, go on.
Is it over, Jan?
Who?
37 games to go. 37 games to go, it's done, isn't it? That's it. Give us the title now.
Well, Al Shearer said it's 258 goals to go to my record. He said after he scored two. I think the first target now for Erling Haaland could be hard enough. He has scored two for Manchester City and Alfie Haaland has scored three. So let's see if he can beat that.
Yeah, so he can be the best Haaland of it all. Jules, it does, you kind of feel, add another level of excitement to the Premier League, not necessarily the competitive level, but to have someone of that quality within it.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, again, we don't have to go back again into the Darwin Nunez, the Erling Haaland sort of competition, if you want. But to see the impact that Darwin had yesterday on Liverpool at a time where Liverpool really needed it. And then the response from Erling, again, for me, they're not really in the same dimension anyway. But let's say because they did the two biggest signings. And to see the response today from Erling from the start. And again, we go back the penalty and the way he got it himself and then took it and scored it. And then the second goal even more. I agree with Robbo. It won't always face a team like West Ham so passive in many respects. I mean, the second goal, Rodri has the time. Rodri doesn't even scan before receiving the ball in his own half on the second goal. And then he can turn and then he can give the ball to De Bruyne, who's on his own as well. And then anyway, so there will be time where it's harder than that. But for Erling today, it was the perfect response to yesterday's actions, to last weekend actions, to all the noise that has been going on all this week. And again, like Pep said, it's not because he scored two that he's like Ronaldo or Thierry Henry just yet, but it's certainly the best star he could have had of his Premier League career, for sure.
We're gonna move. Yeah, there we go. I knew it was coming.
Yeah, I would say a funny thing about pressure, because Jules is saying is, of course, when you come here, you have to prove yourself. A lot of English fans haven't seen him. But I asked him about pressure, and he said, well, this is just after a game. And he said, well, it's 30 minutes since I scored a goal now, so they will probably tell me to score another one. Ah. So this is the 22-year-old with a great attitude. Someone calls it arrogance. I call it self-confidence.
Who's the Nunez? Who's the Haaland in the Gavin Jules podcast, Jules?
Come on. The
latest edition of the podcast will be available on Monday. Will Gab be wearing shorts? That's all we care about. Be sure to check it out.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
There was, after the pre-season United had, a little bit of optimism around the team and what Ten Hag was trying to achieve. That lasts about, 10 minutes. Brighton went to Old Trafford, won by 2-1. this Manchester United team showed no signs, any sort of improvement than what we saw under Rangnick or indeed Solskjaer. How bad were they in your eyes today?
Well, I thought they started the game the first 10 minutes. I thought I could see some patterns of play. I could see what they were trying to do. They were playing with two wide players. Eriksen was coming off the front and the two midfield players. McTominay was making forward runs and Bruno Fernandes was making forward runs as well. And Fred was sitting in the hole in behind them. And I could see a pattern of play. But as soon as they made the first mistake, as soon as they lost possession and Brighton started to play, they just fell apart. They lost confidence. There was no shape to their side. They weren't quite sure what they were doing. They were too slow in possession. When they were playing out from the back, the two centre-halves really didn't have anything to hit. Brighton were clever. They dropped that little bit deeper and said, come on then, where are you going to get it in between us? Let it go into Fred, and Fred made a couple of mistakes as well. It was just a really woeful display by Manchester United. Clever play by Brighton. I thought they were excellent. Their movement was good. But overall, Manchester United in that first half, after the first 10 minutes, as soon as they made a mistake, Ten Hag had all sorts of problems. The players had problems. And you could see they went into their shell and started to make mistake after mistake and mistake. And they didn't look very athletic either. That's a big problem for them.
That analogy, I think, is fair. Mm. In that once Gross scored, you could see everyone go back into their shell. Everyone was just scared to do anything.
Listen, it's easy to play when things are going well. It's easy to play when your confidence is high and ride that wave. The true test comes when you have that bit of a knock. And maybe if Bruno Fernandes takes that chance early on in the first 10 minutes, we're having a different discussion around Manchester United. But here we are having a discussion around United that we've had around other clubs in the past. And Arsenal comes to mind, where once things are good, you are competing. You feel like you can get something out of the game, but from the time there's a mistake or from the time you go behind, there is just no way forward for you. And that's exactly what happened with Manchester United. We've said this about United time and time again, that this is a team devoid of any kind of leadership. Mm. And it showed itself yet again that when they needed big personalities on the park, there was nobody there that you could really turn to and look towards.
It was just so striking. Like, when that goal went in, Jules, this was just a carbon copy of what we'd seen from Manchester United over the last 2 years. Nobody steps up. There's no passion on the pitch. Everybody starts hiding. And it's almost an inevitability that they're going to lose.
That's right. I think it shows again that there's so many problems in there and there's so many issues. And then maybe the biggest one is the mental strength or the mental attitude or the psychology behind what the players and what most of that squad have gone through, especially last season, really, because the season before that, finishing second, and it was a good season with the Europa League final. Last season was hard on so many levels that I think a lot of them still have scars of last season. Where I've got some issues with is that maybe before thinking about patterns of play, maybe before thinking about trying to reproduce what you did at Ajax, maybe try to sort the approach of the game in mentally for your own players, because they should not have collapsed or capitulated, I think is a better word, even at 0-0 after 15 or 10 minutes, like the way they did. And I do wonder what kind of work Ten Hag has done on that point. Then the rest, the football and stuff, but it's not a surprise that they're not good enough. McTominay and Fred were not good enough last season. They cannot be so suddenly become good enough because there's a new manager. Same for Diogo Dalot. And we can go again through the whole team. Is Lisandro Martinez ready straight away to play in the Premier League like that? Clearly, he was not today. And that was only against Danny Welbeck. Christian Eriksen as a false number 9. I'm sorry, this is a terrible idea. So already the setup, plus the mental approach and everything else, they were just not ready against a really good team. It's just not good enough.
Plus, of course, there's the Cristiano Ronaldo conundrum. You throw into it all, Jan. After coming in, saying he was going to be strict with the players, giving them these lists of rules, you got a player then who didn't turn up for pre-season, who left at half-time in a friendly. You then kind of almost... Do you contradict yourself by bringing Ronaldo on?
Yeah, unfortunately, you do. I think Ten Hag got the best motives, what he wants to achieve by Manchester United. But in your leadership as well, because the boys are not stupid, they see that you treat people differently. And he says, I'm ready, the king can play, but the king goes home at halftime and so on and so on. Having said that, it may be their only hope with his goals. But I'm with the boys in terms of philosophy. I mean, to say it a bit simple, Brighton got Graham Potter, Manchester United need Harry Potter because they have to do so much thing there. And I also with Jews, it's quite interesting, this thing that we can talk about the Ajax school and the way of Ajax playing. But this is not Ajax. This is a team that hasn't had a clear way of playing for a couple of seasons. These are players without confidence. These are players just running around. These are players that at the end of the last season were leaking out of the dressing more than Titanic were leaking. This was a terrible culture at that club. So we can be optimistic, or a Manchester United fan can be optimistic about a couple of 2-3 weeks in a pre-season when people are in pre-season. So I think before you expect Ten Hag to make his Ajax, Johan Cruyff kind of great philosophy kind of thing, you have to sort out the minds of the players. And it didn't help today that he clearly played players out of position. And, Manchester United fans, they had like 10 minutes of optimism. Yep. And now they're back and they've seen that they're going after Arnautovic. Yep. I mean, if he's the answer, who is doing the question time?
We'll go on to Arnautovic in a moment. But, Robert, going back to Jules' point about the scars of the last two seasons easily being bare when the chips are down, is that fixable?
You usually have to fix it by making sure the players know exactly what their roles in the side are, what the game plan is, so that when they do make mistakes, you say, OK, you made a mistake, you know, you're not full of confidence, but you've got to keep doing the same things. This is your next pass. This is where your next ball's going to make. These are the runs you've got to make. And if you start to reproduce those patterns of play over and over again, suddenly the players will become more confident. But he had to change it at half-time because Eriksen was playing as a false number nine. He was coming deeper and they were trying to get their two midfield players running on and their two wide players going at the full-backs or the wide centre-halves of Brighton. That didn't really work because Sancho, I thought, was very poor and Rashford equally as poor out on the left-hand side. So it didn't work. So he's got to make sure he keeps doing the same things over and over again, and he's got to make them better at doing those things. If he keeps changing his plans from one week to the next, the players won't know what they're doing, they'll have no confidence, and Manchester United will have a real struggle on their hands, and so will Ten Hag.
Or is it as simple, Robbo, that you could have Pep, you could have Klopp, you could have Ancelotti, you could have Nagelsmann, you could have them all in there, but as long as you've got Fred and McTominay in midfield, this Manchester United side is going to be nowhere near not the title, not the top four, not the Europa League. This is a side that is never going to be competing if it doesn't have the quality.
And absolutely, if you're going to play out from the back, which obviously Ten Hag wanted Maguire and Martinez to do, you can't have Fred as the holding midfield player who's going to link everything up. He made a terrible mistake when the ball was played into him up from De Gea and gave the ball away and Brighton should have scored. If you're going to play that style of football, you've got to have somebody who can play on the ball. That's why he put Eriksen back there in the second half, because Eriksen actually kept the ball a little bit better and switched the play and they did look slightly better. But then Eriksen can't defend in 1v1 situations and people are going to run beyond him. So he's got a lot of things to fix, and McTominay and Fred, you know, while they're energetic and while they're decent players, they're not up to the level needed for Manchester United at the moment.
Must be miserable.
It must be. And listen, and to your point, you're absolutely right. I don't think any manager coming in there changes this that dramatically. And after this game was finished, I sat down, you look at the team sheet and ask, who played well below what was expected? Not expected of them as a Manchester United player, but expected in terms of what we've seen from them over the last 12 months. And maybe Bruno Fernandes because of the chance he missed, but everybody else did exactly as you would expect. And we're talking about a Manchester United team that lost at Old Trafford to Brighton, doing exactly as we'd expect. So this is not an easy fix. And Ten Hag has a bigger job on his hands maybe he's recognizing now, because to your question about Ronaldo, and this was a really interesting conundrum, and we spoke about it all week long, in that we're not really sure what he said to Ronaldo, what he said to that dressing room, how he manages this. But he's had to bring Ronaldo on to save things, and it didn't work. So now a worst-case scenario is that everybody is looking at him as a person who said one thing about Ronaldo, I'm leaving him out, I'm not going to bring him on, but then had to go to him when the chips were down. And it almost feels as though it was better to say, listen, I'm sticking to my guns, that this club is bigger than any player.
Right.
Take the loss on the chin and think about this long term. And again, we're not quite sure how he handled all of this, but worst case scenario is that he said one thing, went back on it, and now you have a dressing room that isn't really sure that they can trust what he says, handles players differently, and now their confidence is also dented because they've lost despite their best efforts.
Well, as we said, you know, without Ronaldo, where are the goals going to come from? Rashford had a couple of chances today. He just looks like completely and utterly out of form, lacking confidence. And Jan brought it up. Marko Arnautović could be the answer, inverted commas, to Manchester United's striking dilemma. At the moment, he's in Bologna playing there. You kind of forgot all about Arnautović, Jules. Where's this come from?
But I mean, I would be really mean if I said this comes from desperation, but I don't think we are too far from the truth, which is sad. It's really sad. And we go back again. We talked about the scars from last season mentally for the players. But the recruitment, I know we say every 6 months for every transfer window, January and the summer, and we say what a mess it is. And every time there's a change, so Richard Arnold and John Murto instead of cousin Ed. And every time we say, OK, maybe this is going to be different now. And it's the same mess. How can United, and again, we go back to Fred and McTominay, it's not to pick on them, but when Liverpool have done their business, when City have done their business, when Arsenal, even at Chelsea, when it's been even more chaos, even more chaotic, they still managed to sign Sterling and Koulibaly and Carney and a few others that maybe for Cucurella, of course. How come United have been still trying now to sign Frankie de Jong after trying for 8 weeks with no plan B, no other ideas? Don't tell me I can name you 50 midfielders who are better than Fred and McTominay that United can go for and sign this summer. And yet, we're August the 7th and we're still stuck where they've signed Malacia at left back, Lisandro Martinez, okay, and they had to chase him, and then Eriksen as a free agent. How is that even possible that they haven't even strengthened their squad, considering how bad their squad is in the first place? It's beyond me. And I think this is also part of the problem. And Arnautović, I'm sorry, but as maybe a talent he was when he was young, to be compared with Ibrahimović because they've got similar profile and style, if you want, he's not the answer, like Jan said earlier. And Benjamin Sesko, by the way, super talented young promising player. But again, he would not be the answer either. He's not going to score you 20 goals a season. So where those two are coming from, I don't know. But I find it really, really sad and desperate from my United point of view.
Yeah, and if I'm a United fan, obviously, this is not the news that I was waiting for, especially with my rivals getting Nunez, obviously City getting Haaland as well. Do the players have that same sort of feeling as well?
Well, I think they have, and I think that's the sad part, because I think when you see the Manchester United team, how they are on the pitch, how they perform, you kind of nearly see it in their faces, because they have sold into coming to Manchester United. And in all due respect to Arnautović, he has a 1/3 goal in for Austria, as you can see here. He has scored his goal. He had an okay season. But hello, hello, hello. This is not possible that Manchester United will go there now. And as Jules was saying, I mean, at the last 2 days, I've seen the best teams in England. I've seen Liverpool, I've seen Manchester City. You see the starting 11, you see their bench, and then you see the Manchester United team now. They have spent money for fun. It's not like you can say Glazers out, Glazers in, but they have spent money. I mean, they have spent so much money. And what you left there is some people without confidence, some players running around doing whatever. And then when you get linked to those kind of players, and again, I'm with Jules, what have you done lately in this summer? I mean, Šeško, I mean, I've seen Šeško a lot. I've been in Salzburg, I've seen him. They tell you he's a great, great talent. There is no way that he can help Manchester United now. Arnautović, I mean, there is no way he can do them better. And it's like you make these things up on a day you lose to Brighton at home, playing terrible. You are linked that Arnautović, in all due respect again, I cited again to the Austrian, but it's unbelievable what the Manchester United fans have to go through now. And Sir Alex Ferguson must sit in the stand and think, this is a movie. Can somebody stop this? Do we have to go another season?
He's thinking, hey, it shows how good I was, isn't it? Hey, what? That's all my complaints over the years. Robert, should we end with you on a positive note?
Good luck.
In terms of Manchester United, and a positive note, there weren't too many positive notes. Not one of their players, I thought, played well enough to say, you know, they're in good form. There wasn't any leaders. You know, sometimes you get, when you see a player, when a team are doing badly, you can see one player take the game by the scruff of the neck and play really well, and the crowd get up because he's doing so well. I couldn't see that about any Manchester United player. After the first 10, 15 minutes, when they started to go wrong, I couldn't see the patterns of play. Nothing really to be happy about if you're a Manchester United supporter or if you're Erik ten Hag.
Well, nothing much to look forward to if you're a United fan.
Home game, Liverpool for United.
Whoa, look at you and your research.
I just had to get that in.
There it is then. There will be more discussion about Manchester United and Ten Hag on Extra Time. As always, you can have a look at that over on our YouTube channel. Impressive show from Barcelona with a very comfortable win over Pumas, beating them by 6-0. Now, the only issue that Barcelona have after that 6-0 win is that, take a look at all these players who were involved in the goals.
Yeah.
Lewandowski, Dembele, Rafinha, Frank Kessie, none of them are registered as it stands for the start of La Liga, which kicks off in less than a week. Jules, this seems to be a bit of an issue, isn't it?
It is. It is a big issue even. And if you remember well, a year ago, pretty much to the day, maybe a little bit later in August, because the season started later, we had the same conversation. Already then, the new signings or the extensions of contracts, those players were not registered. And we back there at the same, in the same place, with the same issue, where they are around 50 million euros short in terms of how much money is coming in and how much their wage bill is going to cost. And La Liga is saying, okay, yeah, you've sold some levers and you got some money in, and that's great, but it's still not enough. So right now, neither of the new signings, the Koundés, the Rafinha, the Lewandowski, all of that are registered. Christensen, Casey, none of the new deals for Sergio Roberto and Dembele can be registered either. So you might be forced to play your first game of La Liga with the old squad, if you want, or the squad from last season, bar Dembele and Sergio Roberto, for the first game, because the other players won't be registered, which is crazy when you think that Barcelona were there a year ago, are still there in the same position, and I mean, I can't believe it, to be fair.
Jules, you haven't met my youngest child. He's a little naughty. Robert made him cry once. It's a little bit like him running around going, if I can't hear you, it's not really happening. You feel this is what Barcelona have been doing, really, over the last year, but they still seem confident they'll be all right, that they'll be able to fix it.
Yeah, and they might be able to, because they've activated three levers already, and there's a fourth one that I believe is pretty much there to activate, which will raise more money.
Jules, when you say lever, you just imagine them in the office. Mm-hmm. One, two, three, and then the fourth one is just going to be money pouring from the ceiling. What does it even mean?
No, but so they sold 24.5% of Barça Studios to a private company. And I think they can sell the other 24.5 to the same company to raise another 100 million euros, which should be enough, I think, to register everyone. But still, I don't think this is the idea either, because at some point you won't have anything to sell anymore.
We don't
so you'll be in the same position. We've used a lot of cards on that. I mean, certainly I have, because of Barcelona financial issues in the last few years, a lot of cars analogy. I've got another one for this. So you go and buy a Ferrari for $100,000 and you pay by check at the car dealer, and then the car dealer called your bank and said, okay, yeah, I've got the check, I want to cash it in. And the bank says, okay, but he only has $50,000 in his bank account and the car costs $100,000. And it's exactly the same. Barca right now, I've signed all those players for X amount of money in transfer fee, X amount of money in wage bill. But on their account that La Liga are monitoring, there's just not enough money right now for it. So I cannot even believe that you can go to an agent and a player and say, are you happy to sign for 5 years for $150,000 a week or $200,000 a week? And everybody says, yeah, yeah. But then you know you don't have the money for it. So I find that all baffling.
Hey, Robbo, Xhaka paid for that Maserati all in cash, didn't he, I reckon?
Absolutely. I saw the cash he paid as well. And it was overpriced.
I'm Xhaka Hislop, don't
he paid
you know?
20, he paid 20,000 just for that Xhaka number plate.
Yeah, first size number plate. Yeah, that's embarrassing. Good. Barcelona then kick off their campaign against Rayo Vallecano. That game live on ABC on Saturday. Preceding that, though, the opening match is in Pamplona as Osasuna take on our team of the day, Sevilla. Find the laws of physics made me think of Stevie. I don't know why. Let's talk about Isco, who has made the move to Sevilla from Real Madrid. Goodness me, it's quite striking when you see his stats, how he has fallen from grace over the last 5 seasons. I remember Robin when he was at Malaga, so much hype around him, linked heavily to Manchester City. In the end, went to Real Madrid. And he just seems to be one of those players in that category that just hasn't fulfilled the potential that many thought that he had.
Well, he had a little spell, didn't he, when he took the place of Gareth Bale. It was him or Gareth Bale that got into the side. And Isco, for a couple of seasons, was excellent playing in a number 10 role or as a third midfield player, making forward runs, getting on the ball, making things happen. But the last two or three seasons, whether he's lost a bit of fitness, whether he's lost confidence, whether he's just lost it completely, I don't think he's been anywhere near the same sort of player. He struggled to get game time. And I think the signing of him, while he can be still potentially a good player, I think it's a couple of years too late because I think we've seen the best of Isco, even though he's not particularly old.
Jules, last 4 seasons, how many league goals has he scored for Real Madrid? What are you going for?
I'd say five.
Five is the correct answer. Oh. Thanks, Shaka's big hand giving away.
I went for three.
I thought you went five.
No, I said three.
I can't see anyway.
I went for three.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, five goals.
Just knowledge.
It's quite incredible, Jules, really, when you think about it and think about the hype around him when he was younger.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, Robbo said it when Zidane managed to find a position for him in this incredible Real Madrid team that won so much, where he had an impact, he had a bit of freedom as well, which I think this is the key with Isco. The more you put him, especially wide, and the more difficult he will find it. He's this kind of artist, number 10, really players that needs to be free, that needs to have that freedom to really express the technical ability that he has, which is way above average, for example. And I'm hoping that Lopetegui and Sevilla will use him that way. I mean, they lacked creativity last season. We saw that they didn't score enough goals. And I think he is coming to do that, to help them for that. But you need to give him that freedom. You can't, again, put him wide or just put him in a way, in a system or a formation where he won't be able to have that freedom to express himself completely. But it's not too late, I'm hoping, that someone can sort of resurrect a little bit a career, that the magic can come back at times. And for that, he has to be a playing team. And again, I think the key is the freedom that they can give him.
So he's joined a Sevilla side who, let's not forget, for quite a large chunk of last season, we were talking as possible title contenders. That completely fell apart. The second half of their campaign, not impressive at all. In the end, they finished fourth, kind of replicated as well with their campaign in Europe. Knocked out the Champions League in the group stages, went into the Europa League, not out of that, the round of 16. And you look at it now, and I'm a Sevilla fan, I am not going into this season with much hope whatsoever, given the fact, obviously, I've lost my centre-backs. Koundé's gone, Carlos has gone. It is very difficult, isn't it, Robbo, to kind of spin this in any sort of positive way, looking at what's happened in the summer in Sevilla.
I'm going to slightly disagree with you. I think, yes, last season was a disappointment. And Lopetegui, I think, is going to take a lot of criticism because there was games where it took them so long to try and dominate the game. They had, but the dominant, they were dominant in possession but didn't really create enough chances. They didn't play at a high enough tempo. And it was only when they needed that little bit of urgency near the end of a game where they started to play forward-thinking football. But they've got some very good players. Ocampos, Lamela. They've got three different goal scorers.
They're not even defenders anymore,
Robbo. Rafa Mir. But they need to play more attacking football. They can still play with a back two. I think they were changed from a back three to a back two, two centre-halves. It's in the attacking areas where they struggled last year, and that's what they've got to improve, whether Isco comes into the side. But Papu Gomez always also likes a free role, so I'm not sure how they're going to fit him in. But with the players that I look in their squad, Rakitic and players like that, you look at their squad, they should be doing a lot more than they did last season. They only lost four games last year in the league, but they drew 16, and that's their big problem. They've got to turn some of those draws into wins and do much better in Europe than they did last season. It's a big year for Lopetegui for me.
Ever the optimist, Stuart Robson, and we'll see if he's right. Sevilla's first game of the season, they're away in Pamplona against Osasuna. It all starts in every single match live on ESPN Plus, Friday, 2:30 Eastern. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
In Germany today, it finished Stuttgart 1, Leipzig 1. Maybe Leipzig need a little more ammunition up front. Timo Werner heading back then to Leipzig from Chelsea after making that big money move back in 2020. It has not worked out, has it? Just the 23 goals for Chelsea compared to what he racked up for Leipzig before he made that move to England. Jan, when we discussed this possibility after those quotes came out, you said it's fine, you know, things are good between Werner and Tuchel. Are you surprised that this has actually happened?
Well, I'm surprised of the development of the story because Werner is a good guy, he's a good lad, but he has had trouble to adjust, I guess, to both London and to moving to a big place like London, a big league and a big team. And he's been seen a bit out of it. But this was a story also developed, and there were some funny comments in the media, Tuchel answering. Then there was a story about him going on loan for one season. That made sense in the terms of the story that he would still try it in Chelsea. But the last 3-4 days is going from a loan deal to a permanent deal. And I think this is as the development when Tuchel saw that I have to do something new, I have to change things. So knowing going back, this is a guy who came for 50 million euro a couple of two seasons later. He's going back about, I've heard around today, around 30. So there is a loss. But still, Timo Werner can go home with a Champions League medal. He will go back to Leipzig, where he had a fantastic time. And him and Kunku up front will do ever so good for the Leipziger.
Yeah, that kind of leads me to the question, next question. Can he replicate that form that he had at Leipzig before he went to Chelsea?
Well, I think this is, there are players, as Xhaka will confirm, there are players who doesn't adjust to new kind of system. It's funny, it's hard to say, no, why, and all that kind of thing. But Timo Werner, if you will take out one player who you think needs that environment around him, needs that system that is suited to him, which you can't get at Chelsea because there's so many great players. And coming back to Leipzig, he will be in a Bundesliga that he knows. He will look forward to the Qatar World Cup. He will be in his safe environment. I think this is a good deal for him. I feel sorry that didn't work out, because used in the right way, Timo Werner is an excellent striker. But I mean, in England and among the Chelsea fans, I think he will remember as the guy who was just not scoring on all the chances he had, because this is a guy who always gets the chances, but his goal-getter skill, he didn't get out in the Premiership and for Chelsea.
Meanwhile, reports are that another attacker is on the move. Anthony Modeste going from over to Borussia Dortmund. You take a look at the numbers that he put in last season, 26 goals in 35 games. I suppose from Dortmund's perspective, they're hoping that he can put in those sort of numbers once again. Do you think he can? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the background to this deal is, of course, the sorry incident with Sebastian Haller, who got cancer. So he will be out. He was the number one striker for them. And then Dortmund had to do something. And Modeste is one of those strikers. He will always get numbers. And he will get his goals. And when the season was over in Cologne, he was always unsettling. He said, maybe I will go. And, you know, it was. And when you have someone who has packed, it's not good to have it in your squad. And he was out of the game today, out of the squad, and Sebastian Kehl of Dortmund said today there is a verbal agreement, which this man with a hat, Baumgart, he hated that, because he said, what kind of preparation is that for me? But still, they managed to beat Schalke 3-1. But I think this is a good deal. He's going there for 1 year, 5 million euro transfer fee, wages on around 6 million euro. Like the sad backstory, but I think Modest will do a good job for Dortmund, because this is a guy who would score goals everywhere.
Well, let's see if they can sign him in time for the second round of matches in the Bundesliga. Friday, we'll see Borussia Dortmund in action away against Freiburg. A reminder, all the games throughout the season live on ESPN+. Oh, it's good to be a PSG fan at the moment, isn't it? What? Scoring goals for fun. The perfect recital on the front page of L'Équipe, and that, of course, picture of Lionel Messi and his bicycle kick, the first ever in his career. George, what are you doing? Why are you so ready? Did you beat Clermont?
I know. To be fair, that's true. And last season, even with Pochettino, when they were not very good, they beat them 4-0 and 6-1. So let's not get carried away. Well, I'm just happy to see Messi already.
I shouldn't get carried away. I shouldn't carry myself away.
But inevitably, we're going to get carried away because it's Neymar and Messi. Should we focus on Neymar first, given that he's been so impressive and so committed, it seems, in these last two games?
Yes, you're right. And we said it even at the beginning of the summer, in July, when he came back earlier from his holidays, which was like everybody in Paris was like, what's going on? What's happening? And it's true. He's sharp. He's committed. Maybe the fact that the club has kicked his butt a little bit by saying, yeah, you're on the market. If anyone comes for you, and they've offered him to a lot of clubs in Europe as well, just in case, maybe that sort of shook him up a little bit. And it's like, you know what? I need to get a grip here, because they want to sell me. They want to let me go. With a new manager, maybe I'm not going to play much. I don't know. But certainly, that looks like that had an impact and an effect on him, because it's a very different Neymar than the one we saw at the same stage last season. For example, he's on good form. He's sharp. He's committed. He's focused. He's efficient even in front of goals in the assist. Three assists in that game against Clermont. One goal on the back of the French Community Shield where he was very good as well against Nantes. It's good to see him like that. I don't know how long he will last, if he will last, and if he will be consistent enough, because this is something that has lacked for him in Paris since he joined 5 years ago, in the sense that at times he was really good and then he would be anonymous again and then up and down very much. So, but at least to start the season, it's one of the best Neymars we've seen in Paris, for sure.
And for Messi, doing something in a PSG shirt that he never did for Barcelona. Take that, world.
Yeah, scoring an overhead kick like that. I mean, I think the goal is amazing. I know he's not super high in the air like the Cristiano overhead kick with Real Madrid against Juventus, or like the Bale one against Liverpool. I get that. There's better overhead kicks than his. But I think the ball from Paredes is amazing. His first touch as well. And then to have the intelligence to do that is brilliant. And also he goes back, it goes at the end of another impressive performance from him. He's sharper than he was, obviously, last season. He's had a full preseason. Him, like Neymar, came back earlier from holidays. And he's almost like, you could feel back of the Messi that we saw 2 or 3 years ago at Barcelona. Still not the top Messi that of 10 years ago, but certainly a much better Messi than any Messi that we saw last season.
How good was that finish, Robbo?
Good finish. What I liked also was he made a forward run. You know, so often Messi comes back to receive the ball and then has to go at people. That time he made a run in behind. He realised where the space was. Great first touch and the awareness to know where the keeper was. Yeah, top class goal.
Best goal ever, Shaq. That's what Jules was tweeting. We heard.
I'm sure he was. Best goal Jules has ever seen. It was a good goal.
Yep.
Let's just leave it there.
Of course, there could be an additional member to Messi and Neymar in the squad. Fabian making the move from Napoli. Robert, you've seen a lot of him. How much do you like him?
Mm-hmm. He's a very good midfield player, very much left-footed. I wouldn't say he's a great passer, but you're not going to see him hit 50, 60-yard passes over the top. He's a player that likes to run with the ball. He'll play little one-twos. He's quite efficient defensively as well. I think he's a very, very good player that needed a move from Napoli, and he's got his move now. Hopefully he'll go and prove what a good player, and what a very good player he can be.
Jules, how close are we to seeing this deal get done?
Yeah, I think it's quite likely, in the sense that he's got 1 year left on his contract, that Luis Campos, the PSG sporting director, has been speaking to his agent for a while now, and now the two clubs are going to talk. I think Napoli, they know that with 1 year left, it's in their interest to let him go now, and I don't think they will ask extortionate amount of money, because I think they feel as well, like Robert just said, that it's probably the right time for him to go, and it's the end of his cycle. I'm a bit sceptical, I have to say. I've seen him being very good, but I feel that sometimes he picks the games where he's actually at his best and where he's focused. And I've seen other games where he just never turned up. But they wanted a left-footed midfielder.
He'll suit PSG
profile,
then.
So
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, exactly. Inconsistent player you can't trust. Perfect. It's the rhetoric.
Thank you very much.
Beautifully. Just a reminder to keep up to date as to where Fabian Ruiz will end up, and indeed the rest of the players that could be making the move between now and the end of the season, or end of this month. Be sure to check out Transfer Talk on the website.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
We will be back tomorrow, of course, for more. But be sure to stay tuned as Extra Time is next. Jan will crowbar Haaland, I'm sure, into every single conversation, every single answer he has. Stay with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Shaka is with us in the studio. Robbo and Jan are back with us. Jan, do you want to just tell us the story you were telling us of the reaction of someone at Sellers Park?
Yeah, it was interesting. I did three English games this weekend and I was at Sellers Park. At halftime, I was kind of going down for an interview. And this guy in the front row behind the goal, he said, Jan, come over here. And I said, what? And he said, yeah, just come over. You know, when you're at the ESPN, what's wrong with this Craig Burley? He's grumpy all the time. Yeah. And of course, yeah. I had to tell the truth that he's smiling all the time. This is just a role he does on TV.
Craig Burley have you met yet? that is the most asked question I get from people. Is Craig Burley really like that in real life? And the answer is 100% yes.
And even in London, Dan, even in London, all over the place.
Yes, definitively. I think it is well known how grumpy Burley is. I think he's back this week from his holiday. And he'll go, I haven't been on one, I haven't been away. I haven't seen anything. That's what I'll get. I haven't watched anything.
Good luck, Dad.
Robbo, there was a dry pitch gripe from Klopp after the game at Fulham yesterday. How does a dry pitch affect the game player performance? Mm. What's the worst pitch ground you've played at top level?
The worst pitch I played at were the two plastic pitches at QPR and Luton Town. They were the worst pitches. And in the 80s, at the start of the season, the pitches were good. Yeah, they might be a bit dry. The grass was a bit long, which slowed the ball down. And that's what Klopp was probably arguing about or moaning about. The ball didn't roll particularly smoothly. But come sort of February time, pitches were starting to get hard. There wasn't as much water put on the pitches. Not so much grass on pitches in those days. That's when they became bobbly. And one of the worst ones was Highbury. That was a terrible pitch in the early 80s. They played a couple of semi-finals there and both managers absolutely hated the pitch. So there was a lot of bad pitches in those days. But the reason he's talking about it being dry, the ball doesn't run as smoothly.
Oh, okay.
But it's true that there are some teams doing that. But it was funny now at Craven Cottage because Fulham put some photos out showing how much they're watering the pitch. So I think that was Jurgen Klopp. I don't think he meant that so seriously. He was first by me. He just talked about what he had done wrong, what a team has done wrong, and then it ended up being that dry pitch. So I think that was just the frustration of the performance of Liverpool on Saturday.
You know, I'm with Jan. I don't think Klopp meant it that as that much of an excuse. And Rob was right in pointing out dry pitches slow the game down, etc., etc. But it's roasting hot in England. So even if you water it before, it dries off. And I think he was just seeing it.
It's not roasting hot in England.
It's hot.
Well, roasting
it's hot.
My point is, I think when he said that, it was more to his team in that when pitches dry out, you have to be able to adjust your game. And Liverpool clearly didn't. So I thought that was more a criticism of his team's inability to adjust than it was a criticism of Fulham.
What do you prefer as a goalkeeper in a pitch?
I prefer a nice, slick surface as well.
Yes.
Yeah, like
of course
you do.
A dry pitch.
The bounce is truer. When it has a little damp on top, it does the ball. The pitch is truer, so it doesn't. Sometimes when it's dry, the ball bounces higher. The bounce is more inconsistent.
Did you play in the plastic pitch, or the Luton Town? Or the
I played in Preston's.
What's that like as a keeper?
Awful. I played in Preston's. I played in Costa Rica at World Cup qualifiers. But then, both Robbo and Jan remember this. Manchester United's pitch back in the day, come January, February, was just awful because of how high the sides of Old Trafford were.
Yeah, you didn't get any
sun. And so they would always have to change the pitch to different.
Would you ever not dive and just kind of go? So you wouldn't hurt your elbow.
Go how? Go. Let me see that. I do not recall ever doing anything like that, Dan.
Oh, it looks a bit rough down. I'm going to do a dive. Oh, they can't blame me for that. Jan, what's wrong with Sancho? He looks like Eden Hazard at Real Madrid.
Oh. So this guy or this girl or whoever asked this question saw Manchester United today. And he singled out Sancho. What's wrong with him? Mm. I mean, what's wrong with everyone at Manchester United. What's wrong with the management going at Arnautović? What's wrong with everybody in and around the club at the moment? So if Sancho is like taking out single out, Sancho's actually had a quite good preseason. It's probably less wrong with him, like a thousand other things at that club.
What may surprise to learn is when Robbo was coaching, he actually got on well with the youngsters. So I ask you this, Robbo, is what would you do to help Jadon Sancho?
You somehow got to give him confidence. You've got to work with him, I would say, and do some one-on-one work with him, because he can be... I saw him as a young player playing for Man City's youth team. I saw him play for the England under-17s, where he was the best player in the tournament, the European Championships. And he went past people with great confidence. He went past them with speed. He went past them with trickery. Today, and when I've seen him last season, he hasn't got that about him at the moment. He wants to do it, but he's not able to do it at the moment. So he needs to get his confidence back, 1v1s, get him against a young player, you know, a reserve team player, let him go past him a few times, get crosses into the box, get shots away. But he's got to be given that confidence, because at the moment, he looks like he's lacking confidence. And a player of his quality and the things he does, you need to be playing at the top of your game and playing with confidence. He's not doing that.
And the funny thing is, Dan, is that Sancho is taken as an example of coming from Bundesliga, struggling in England. So is Timo Werner. The only thing that's Haaland will ruin that. It's okay. He was
scoring
England as well.
We haven't got to Haaland. No one's asked about Haaland yet, Jan.
Everything's about
Not
Haaland.
Not everything has to be
Everything's
about Haaland.
About Haaland.
The answer, is Imba, always Haaland. Always.
Whatever the question, the answer's Haaland. We talked about Ten Hag a lot on the show already, but if you're Ten Hag, you've already moved on from De Jong. How do you handle losing your opener to Brighton, considering the player's attitude on the pitch today? Going back to your coaching days, Robbo, what do you do? Get them in on a day off? Give them, like, where do you stand on how to try and get this team performing again?
Well, I was interested in how he was going to cope when they weren't doing particularly well, because when a new manager comes in with a new philosophy and he wants them to play a certain style of football, and you start off with the way he obviously wants to play, with a back four, two centre-backs, the holding midfield player, two midfield players playing inside right and inside left, making forward runs, two really wide players. And I was interested to see how he developed that as the game went on. But because it wasn't successful, he went away from that. So all the pre-season work that he's done and all the work he's done on the training field, after 45 minutes, he has to change it slightly, because he then brings Ronaldo on to play through the middle. They then looked a little bit out of shape at times. So he's got to stick with what he believes is his best formation. He's got to make them better at doing that. You can't change and chop and change after just one game. He's got to try and get his ideas across, which he's been doing in pre-season. He's got to then stick with it for as many games as possible, maybe the first 10 games, and then build on that once he knows he's got the format right. At the moment, I think the players played so poorly and the system didn't work that he's almost in two minds now whether to change it after one game.
What's striking, Jan? You've obviously played at the highest level. I don't know if it's just me looking in, not really know what I'm talking about, but there doesn't seem to be anybody on that pitch, in that starting 11 or in that squad, that you could feel could step up and get a reaction from the side, from their teammates, from their colleagues, kind of bring them together and get the best out of them.
No, that's a fair analyse, Dan. I see it exactly the same way, because the problem with Manchester United at the moment, and I was in that last answer as well, is about the culture. There is a culture in and around the club now. Now they've tried everything. They tried Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, a former Manchester United player. They tried a professor from Germany known for building up clubs. Now it's Ten Hag with a proven philosophy from Ajax. And I agree with Robbo. He will do it over time, and he will. But as you saying, when you have a look at that pitch, that there is no one who seems to rise the game. Nobody expects, well, he will do this, he will do that, and he will be the soldier at the beginning there saying, you go behind me, I will sort this out. And the sad thing for Manchester United fans, this is not only on the pitch, off the pitch, the culture of the club is terrible as well. And this De Jong saga that we've had all summer, it just reminds me more and more of Dumb and Dumber when he's Jim Carrey is standing in the door and asking for this girl, and this girl says, not one in a million, and he says, yes! There is a chance, and Manchester United shouldn't do that. They should. They could date Jennifer Aniston. You know that, Dan.
So, do you know whose favourite movie Dumb and Dumber is, Jan? Who's on the show regularly?
It's probably Stevie.
No.
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 Not far off.
Craig Burley.
Not far off. No, Burley doesn't like comedies.
Grumpy.
Don Hutchinson.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I should have known that. You could have played in that film.
Yeah. Which one is he? Dumb or dumber?
50-60 of being the dumb.
Robbo, how can you possibly believe Man United will finish above Arsenal? Is your only argument really that they can't be that bad again when they were bad that bad again today? Arsenal have improved with Jesus up top and Saliba at the back.
Yeah, if you listen to what I actually said in the previous one, I wasn't sure how Manchester United would do, so I thought that Ten Hag might come in at last and be a coach that would improve them or get them in a shape and make sure they got the best out of each player. And Arsenal, on their day, as we saw at the weekend, are an excellent side. When everything's going well and everything's going Arsenal's way, I think they can beat anybody. They look an excellent side. But we've seen over the last few years, when things start to go wrong for Arsenal, they then lose their way completely and maybe lose three or four on the trot. Then they don't seem to be able to understand what's going wrong. Arteta doesn't seem to be able to change it immediately and resurrect their sort of season in the next match. So that's why I put Arsenal down in sixth. On their day, and I think they're probably maybe even the best team, apart from Man City at the moment, maybe even the best team in the league, the way they're playing. But over the course of the season, they're going to have some bad spells.
So on that point, Robbo, has anyone's opinions of who will be relegated or finish top four change after watching game week one? Have you changed your mind?
Yeah, I would say if anybody watching Manchester United today would say they're going to be nowhere near the top four because it's going to take Ten Hag a lot longer than the 10 games I was talking about to get his philosophy across and get the team pattern going right and get the best out of the players. It's going to take him longer than that. They're going to have some bad spells. They're going to have some good games, I'm sure, because he is a good coach. But I think Manchester United, I would take out the top four, and Chelsea maybe, and Arsenal moving up.
Oh, that was Robert being nice to Arsenal. That's a first.
I'm not sure how to respond to that.
Did you have United in the top four?
No.
Well, you're right then. Yeah, and did you?
No, absolutely not. No. I mean, I had Tottenham in third, and they confirmed that. But I'm with Robbo Manchester. But I had Robbo Manchester United because it's going to be so hard for them because changing culture is not only about buying players, and you can have someone, you can have a savior coming in when you see the players they are linked with, there are not much savior over them.
We, of course, discussed relegation. The general consensus was those that came up are going to go straight back down. We saw Forest lose against Newcastle. Fulham put up a good fight against Liverpool. Meanwhile, Bournemouth, didn't they beat Villa 2-0? Mm. Have you changed your mind as who would be relegated from what we saw in the first?
No.
Did you go for those three?
I went for the promoted three. And listen, to stay up as a promoted team, you have to get off to a good start. I think two of them did. But still, I just feel over the long course, I'm not changing my mind on that on one day.
Robbo?
I think
hey, you're not Robbo, Jan.
Sorry.
You carry on, Jan. You carry on. You're in full flight. You know,
he's excited.
As you were as a player, he's in full flight taking the ball off other people.
No, I'm just very enthusiastic about what I saw at Fulham because Fulham did a right thing against Liverpool. I liked the way they played. I liked the atmosphere in Craven Cottage. I think there could be a surprise this season. I think Silva is a very good coach. As long as they don't start with this playing out from the back. Playing out from the back when you are Fulham FC should be forbidden. All teams at the down part of the table in the Premier League shouldn't play out from the back. They tried a couple of times in Craven Cottage and Liverpool nearly scored every time.
So there's no answer in there, Jan.
I say that I can't remember who I got for relegations.
I to be honest. To
it's just noise.
I wasn't listening to myself.
Robbo?
Well, I said Nottingham Forest might survive when I saw them last season, but then most of their good players were on loan and have gone back to their parent clubs. And when I saw them against Newcastle yesterday, They were very poor. They were disorganised. But Stevie Cooper is a good manager. I think they're going to be touch and go whether they go down. I put Brentford in the bottom three. They had a good comeback against Leicester, so maybe I got that wrong. But that's going to be a difficult one.
Apparently, you had Brentford as well, Jan, alongside Fulham. And who was the other one? Bournemouth, did you tell me? Bournemouth.
Yes, as we know, come to the end of the season, it's going to be excitement to follow those tips. The last 37 games will decide it. But I will stick to my three. I will stick to my three.
You just said you liked Fulham.
Yeah, I like Fulham, but I still say... Did I say Fulham?
Yes. You said Fulham.
Next question, please.
It's been a long weekend, Jan, a long weekend.
Final question, and it's to Jan. Here we go. Goodness me.
Okay. Erling Haaland. It's,
yes, yes. Who will score more goals, Sadio Mane or Lewandowski, and why is it Erling Haaland?
But on a serious note, it's quite unbelievable to see here in England as well now with Nunez against Haaland, and we just played one game and the community shield.
Question's Mane or Lewandowski?
Oh, yeah. Also, that was just your personal second question of that part. Okay, I have to put my glasses on that. Now, Sadio Mane, a fantastic start at Bayern Munich. It's like he's been there all his career. He's so integrated in the team. Today, he was sitting watching Bayern Munich second team play. So, but you just get a feeling. Robert Lewandowski in a friendly today scored his first goal at Camp Nou, and I think he will end up scoring more goals than Mane.
Who do you think, Shane?
Lewandowski. Well, I think a game registered at this point.
Oh yes, that's very serious, scary. And
well, just
very serious, important. No, there.
He might score zero goals this season. You with Barcelona going?
That's it, Robbo. What's your plans for the rest of the week now?
Oh, I've got a nice week ahead of me. We're actually going away for a couple of days before La Liga starts next weekend, and it's all comes to
where
work
are you going?
Again. So a couple of days away, that should be nice. We're going to Suffolk. I've made sure the gardener's going to put all the hoses on in my garden, even though there's a hose pipe ban, but just make sure the plants are all nice.
Water is a precious resource at the moment.
Southwold.
So your garden.
Yeah, precious for my garden. It's very precious for my garden, let me tell you.
What a treat for the family, Suffolk. Jan, do you just live in England now in the hotel?
No, I have to go home. I will go home. And then on Wednesday is a Super Cup final between my old club, Eintracht Frankfurt. We had a fantastic game against Bayern 06.
Yes.
So that's going to be an interesting game. And next week is three Premier League games again. And so there's a lot of football to be seen the coming week.
Where is the Super Cup, Jan? Where are you going for that?
I'm not going to Helsinki. I do it on
Helsinki?
TV in the studio, but it's Helsinki.
Yeah. Oh, why is it there?
Because UEFA are politicians and they send this Super Cup final around Europe. But just watch it. In some time, it will get to USA as every other game.
Come on. There's a very loaded comment there, but I think we should wrap this up, Dan.
Mm. Is Helsinki nicer than Norway?
No, not at all. But Helsinki is part of our neighbourhood, so you would do. The Finns are great people, so you can have a good time in Helsinki if you like.
Antti Niemi, when he was at Southampton, he was always very nice to me. That's it. He was from
Was he nicer than Yanis to you?
Yeah, that's our old that's the old phone-in, isn't it, on Talk Sport? Where some Scottish person saying, we should have Antti Niemi, he should come and play for Scotland. And he goes, no, he's Finnish. And he goes, no, he's not Finnish. I saw him play last week, he was great. Hey. There we go. Hey.
Boom, boom.
There you are. Enjoy Suffolk, Robbo. You're the first man to do that. ESPN BBC back on your screens tomorrow. As the season is well and truly underway, I'm sure plenty of reflection on what we saw on the opening weekend of the Premier League.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.